dozens more Palestinians have fallen victim to the ongoing U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, raising the total death toll from the aggression to nearly 31,000. The resistance movement Hamas emphasizes that Israel is hindering all efforts by mediators to finalize the ceasefire agreements in the Gaza Strip. And Yemen's Ansarullah leader stresses that the naval operations in the Red and Arabian Seas will never stop unless the genocide and siege on Gaza comes to an end. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. More than 5 months into the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the regime's incessant airstrikes and shelling keep claiming innocent lives in the besieged territory. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, over 80 people were killed and 140 others injured since Wednesday. Several Palestinians lost their lives after the regime's troopers once again opened fire on crowds waiting for aid trucks in the west of Gaza City. In the north of Gaza City, an aerial raid on a mosque in the Jabalia refugee camp also claimed lives. Meanwhile, malnutrition and dehydration persist, inflicting severe consequences on the Palestinian population. Gaza's medical sources say that the number of people who died from malnutrition and dehydration has surged to 20. More than 30,800 Gazans, most of them women and children, have been killed since Israel launched its war in early October. Jimmy McGoldrick, UN humanitarian coordinator for the occupied Palestinian territory, has warned of serious acute malnutrition in the northern parts of Gaza. He says that the UN will assess on Thursday how it can use an Israeli military-controlled road to deliver more humanitarian aid to desperate Palestinians.
Hunger has reached catastrophic levels, and especially in the north of Gaza, which we haven't served for weeks. And yesterday's convoy attempt was again disrupted because of the ransacking of that and the insecurity. Their children are now, as we see in the images on the media, who are dying of hunger-related diseases. And in order to prevent that from happening, we have to have a plan that allows us to, you know, prevent famine. That we need to significantly scale up the humanitarian assistance in there. And that would be that, you know, we have to use this military road, this fence road at the side, on the eastern side, to allow material to come from the crossing point at Kerem Shalom and Rafah all the way up to the north and into the north. This road runs parallel to the edge of Gaza Strip. It's on the eastern side, and it's a road that the military use to use their own supply lines and deliver, you know, moving in. They have a number of crossing points into below Karni. There's a place called Berry, which is the crossing point they'll probably use. The idea would be that you get the trucks scanned, and there'll be 14 or 15 trucks from WFP will be scanned. They go outside onto the roads, and then they enter into this route. I think it's called Route 93 or 96, and then you go north on that road. There is no traffic on that road other than military traffic, and we have to get up at least 300 trucks a day. Right now, we're lucky if we're getting about 150. And so to address those issues properly, we have to do that. And these other options like airdrops, these are helpful, but these are not going to address the significant needs, which can only be done by road transport. And that's something we have to do. And it's when you get a time like Ramadan coming up, it pulls into focus how desperate people find themselves in. So I think people are looking for a way to get back to something normal, something more stable and something more certain. And hopefully that will happen in the near future, and hopefully that we get some sort of pause which will allow us to stabilize people's health, people's food security.
The Chinese foreign minister says that his country supports the full UN membership of a Palestinian state, urging other members of the Security Council to refrain from creating any obstacles to the issue.
China firmly supports the just cause of the Palestinian people to restore their legitimate national rights and has always been committed to a comprehensive and lasting solution to the Palestinian issue. We support Palestine's membership as full United Nations member state and call on certain Security Council members not to set obstacles to this.
Wang Yi also called the ongoing deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza a tragedy for humankind and a disgrace for civilization. He reiterated Beijing's call for an immediate ceasefire, saying that there are no justifications for the continuation of war and no excuses for the killing of civilians. The top Chinese diplomat said that historical injustices suffered by the Palestinians cannot continue for generations without being corrected. Beijing has always been sympathetic to the Palestinian cause and supportive of a two-state solution. The Palestinian delegation is in New York to meet with the UN chief and the president of the Security Council to highlight Gaza's catastrophic conditions. Two medics accompanying the group recount their harrowing experience and the loss of their family members during a presser held alongside the Palestinian envoy to the UN. Let's take a listen.
You guys heard it in TVs and everything, but honestly, we lived every single day for 13 days in Gaza, and it wasn't easy. You saw all what you're going to hear this. I saw it in my eyes, and I've treated patients, and I cried every single day. And thank God that I came back here to at least be their voice, not my voice, their voice. I'm a maxillofacial surgeon. I lived in the state. I volunteered a lot of missions, so I joined a mission recently to the European hospital in Gaza. I stayed there for 2 weeks. We lived at the hospital. We treated a lot of patients. We, as a group, we treated more than 200 patients. Myself, I treated 16 surgeries. It's not the surgeries you've done. It's the amount of displaced people and the active refugee camp that I lived in. People live in the tents, live in the floor, live in the wards.
Since the 7th of October, my family members, over 150 of them, have been murdered by Israel's brutal assault on Gaza, either by Israeli bombardment, snipers, or the cruel and ruthless denial of humanitarian aid, with no access to clean water, with food, equitable health care services. Thousands more have been tormented with horrific injuries, forced starvation, trauma, and displacement to evacuation camps and catastrophic living conditions. In December, one of our family members, Sabri Al-Farra, was murdered in his home by an Israeli airstrike with his 9 young children. His unfortunate wife survived. She was 8 months pregnant. She was displaced to an evacuation camp where she gave birth to her baby boy 1 month later in January. Her child, her newborn infant, died 20 days later from the cold and the harsh conditions in the camps. Today, none of us are here for condolences. We're not here for apologies. We're here for immediate action. We have demonstrated that every minute signifies the loss of a life, the starvation of a child. And so we need an immediate and permanent, not temporary, permanent ceasefire now.
Palestinians continue to resist against the invading Israeli forces as the regime keeps its onslaught on besieged territory. In their latest operations, Palestinian resistance groups targeted Israeli military vehicles in Al-Zaytun neighborhood south of Gaza City, inflicting losses on the enemy. The resistance fighters have also targeted an Israeli Merkava tank in eastern Jabalia. The Israeli military has confirmed one of its soldiers has been killed and 13 more have been injured during the clashes with Palestinians. Israel says 247 of its troops have been killed since the beginning of the ground invasion into Gaza. Palestinians, however, say that Israel hides the real number of its casualties to prevent public anger. The Hamas resistance movement says that Israel has thwarted all efforts by mediators to reach a ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip. A senior Hamas official said that Israel has rejected to end its onslaught on the besieged strip to ensure aid entrance and the return of displaced Palestinians. The Hamas delegation has left Cairo without achieving a breakthrough in negotiations. Hamas says the talks are set to resume next week. Envoys from the U.S., Qatar, and Hamas were involved in talks for a ceasefire agreement. The parties are scrambling to reach an agreement before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan that begins on March 10. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah says the movement will continue its sophisticated operations on Israeli-linked ships in the strategic waterways around the country until the ongoing genocide in Gaza comes to an end. Abdel Malik al-Houthi also warned the Israeli regime of the upcoming operations, stressing that they will be greater in scale and impact. Houthi then slammed the U.S. complicity in the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. He said the U.S. delivers aid to Gaza in an attempt to whitewash its primary role in enabling the genocide of Palestinians through military and financial support for Israel. Houthi also censured the Israeli attacks on starving Palestinians who were scrambling for food and patients in hospitals. He said that Israel's atrocities are aimed at compensating for the regime's failure in achieving its stated goals. The leader of the Ansarullah also called on the Islamic countries to go beyond mere condemnation and take practical steps to end the aggression on Gaza. He added an all-out boycott campaign by the Islamic nations could have rendered the regime totally bankrupt within months. Well, the Yemeni army has launched yet another attack on a U.S. vessel in the Gulf of Aden. U.S. officials say that at least three crew members were killed in the attack. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more from Sana'a.
Hours after targeting two American destroyers in the Red Sea and at the same location where the sunken British ship Roby Mar was attacked, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that they had successfully targeted the American cargo ship True Confidence in the Gulf of Aden with naval missiles, causing the ship to catch fire.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles. The hit was accurate thanks to God, which led to the fire breaking out on it. The targeting operation came after the ship's crew rejected warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Officials suggest that the U.S. claims of the loss of lives come within the Western narrative and could be a fabrication to justify larger aggression against Sana'a and to garner international support against Yemeni naval operations.
Since 2015, we have been facing the American-backed Saudi aggression, and in all our military operations, we have not targeted any civilians, and this is an honorable history for our armed forces. Regarding the deaths of civilians in the attack on the American ship, this news comes within the American narrative. This news may be fabricated to escalate attacks against Yemeni territory. We are prepared for confrontation in all its forms, and our naval operations will escalate whenever the Western attack escalates, whether against our brothers in Gaza or against Yemeni territory.
U.S. officials reported that three of the ship's crew members were killed while others were critically injured.
Observers state that the Yemeni army's latest operation substantiates that the threats of escalating naval operations were not mere media propaganda. Moreover, they assert that the Yemeni army has already begun deploying unexpected weaponry, catching the U.S. Navy off guard and leading to the failure to protect its vessels. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the arrogant powers commit oppression, aggression, and genocide wearing a disguise of democracy and human rights. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks during a meeting with Iran's newly elected members of the country's Assembly of Experts. Ayatollah Khamenei said the events in Gaza are a clear example of oppression by the arrogant powers, and Iran opposes that. He also condemned the West's support for Israeli atrocities and said it's against any logic and human conscience. Ayatollah Khamenei explained that Iran has no conflict with governments, countries, and nations, but it does oppose oppression and aggression. The Iranian leader emphasized that his country will always stand at the forefront of the battle against global arrogance. The Islamic Republic of Iran has long pursued a policy of deepening ties with neighboring and regional states. Russia is one of the countries that Iran has boosted its cooperation with in recent years. The two countries have close economic and political ties and are now eyeing the opportunities to further strengthen and broaden their ties.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Latest polls are showing that radical right parties are poised to secure the top position in several European countries at the next EU elections in June. Many have lost faith in the European Union and its ability to work for the common good of all Europeans. Our correspondent Max Civelli has more from Rome.
According to the latest European Council on Foreign Relations think tank's forecast for the 2024 European Parliament elections, there will be a major shift to the right in many member states in the June vote. The forecast also indicates that populist radical right parties are likely to gain votes and seats across the European Union, while centre-left and green parties will be losing votes and seats. Far-right formations are poised to secure the top position in nine countries, including Austria, France, Italy and Poland.
The risk that right and far-right formation will change the face of the EU at the next elections in June is dramatically high. Domestic and foreign policy choices will be definitely affected. This can be explained by looking at the policies in favor of the multinational and of the United States that have been adopted so far by the EU leadership, policies that go against the very interest of the Europeans.
Some analysts argue that an increasing number of EU citizens hold Brussels accountable for soaring food costs, economic stagnation, and deteriorating living standards across the old continent. The European Union has failed in many ways to deliver on its promises. Europeans' wealth has been gravely tarnished by more than two decades of tough fiscal measures and wild privatization and outsourcing policies, which have resulted in widespread company closures and massive layoffs.
L'asse tra Inghilterra.
The UK-US axis has been dictating the line, and practically all political parties across the EU, from left to right, have shifted ideologies and allegiances with the goal of remaining as close as possible to that line. The result is that this EU is anti-people entity. It wages lawfare against its own people, EU citizens' money is used to fund wars and the purchase of weapons, and not to support livelihoods.
EU officials have recently unveiled plans to boost defense production by promoting joint military purchases of European-produced arms among the member states. From February 2022 to June 2023, EU states spent more than 100 billion euros on defense acquisitions, with the US alone accounting for more than 60%. In 2022, more than 95 million people in the European Union, or 22% of the population, were at risk of poverty or social exclusion. Max Civelli, Rome.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality, youth, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Official records show that Jeremy Hunt, the UK Chancellor, has been forced to contribute more than £100,000 of his own money to his constituency Conservative Party to bolster his chances of re-election. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. For the past few weeks, Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, has had a clear mission. Under pressure from Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, he and his Treasury officials have been poring over their options for pre-election tax cuts that the Prime Minister is convinced are needed to give the Tories a fighting chance at the forthcoming general election. However, had Hunt consulted his own constituents, he might have come to a very different conclusion about what he needs to prioritise in the coming days. A recent opinion poll in his new Godalming and Ash seat, a brick in the blue wall now under attack from the Liberal Democrats, suggests Jeremy Hunt is on course to be the first serving Chancellor in modern times to lose his seat in the House of Commons. According to a recent survey poll commissioned by campaign group 38 Degrees, the Liberal Democrats are currently on 35% of the vote, the Conservatives back on 29% and Labour on 22%. With tactical voting, the Chancellor could be an even more distant second place. But the findings also suggest that, far from being enticed back to the Tory fold by tax cuts, his own constituents prioritise the woes of the National Health Service above all else. Asked to identify the issues determining their election vote, health and the National Health Service came top, followed by the cost of living crisis and the economy in general. Only 4% of the voters said tax was a key election issue. Among his local voters, an alarming 59% said close friends or family had experienced difficulty in booking a GP appointment, and almost half had struggled to book an appointment themselves. To hammer home the point, two-thirds or 67% of voters of those asked said increasing funding for public services such as the National Health Service would be more important in determining their vote. 25% said tax cuts would be more important. Matthew McGregor, the chief executive of the 38 Degrees Group, said, "Under Jeremy Hunt's chancellorship, lives have got worse in Godalming and Ash. It's as simple as that." McGregor added, "This election is a chance for change and all parties need to listen up. The public wants our National Health Service to be saved and they want help with the cost of living crisis. They don't want cheap tax tricks to buy votes and ruin our essential public services." The findings show that before one of the most crucial political weeks of his long career, Jeremy Hunt finds himself stuck between three competing and contradictory realities. The first is the political reality that tax cuts of some kind have been so priced in that number 10 it's clear that they have to be delivered in some form or another. But beyond Westminster, the reality of the pressure on public services is troubling voters, including Jeremy Hunt's Godalming electorate. Then there is the unwelcome economic reality that Jeremy Hunt is dealing with. However, the Chancellor chooses to find the cash for tax cuts in the coming days, with Number 10 Downing Street pushing for a cut to the basic rate of income tax, and the Treasury preferring a cheaper national insurance reduction. There are now increasingly despairing warnings that they will be based on future public spending commitments that are a complete fantasy. Hunt thought to have about £13 billion headroom within his own fiscal rules, has been looking at finding more cash by dialing down already very tight future spending plans, cutting any increases from about 1% a year to 0.75%. Economists believe it is almost impossible to achieve such small rises given the pressure facing public services, but the desperation with which tax cuts are being pursued means that Jeremy Hunt may have to deploy such a suspension of disbelief. David Gove, a former Tory Chief Secretary to the Treasury, said that the low spending plans in place already amounted to a hospital pass to the next Chancellor. He said, "Nobody really believes that is going to be deliverable. There are two grounds on which Conservatives try to distinguish themselves from Labour on the economy. One is that Conservatives will be more fiscally cautious, and second, that they would deliver lower taxes. Particularly at the moment, those two attributes are in tension with each other." David Gove, a former Tory Chief Secretary to the Treasury, noted, "This is probably his last big job and this is probably his last budget. If I was Jeremy Hunt, my priority would be ensuring that his reputation and the Conservatives' reputation for good economic management is enhanced, not diminished, rather than trying to gamble that a big tax cut would be transformational, which I don't think it would be." There is one other pre-election trick to play. Included in Jeremy Hunt's pre-budget options have been plans to steal some of the few revenue-raising ideas that the Labour Party has committed to. An overhaul of the tax status and increasing the windfall tax on energy companies. That would spike Labour's guns. But with the right already critical of Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak, there is a very real political danger that such a move will do nothing to help the Prime Minister regain control and authority over an increasingly ungovernable Conservative Party.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Now what we're going to do is to learn a little bit about Quranic taqwa. Basically, what we're going to do is to cover four important signs of taqwa, and then what we'll try to do is to measure ourselves and see where do we stand as mu'mineen when it comes to Quranic taqwa. But before we do that, we have to recap a little bit. What did we learn about taqwa before? What we learned about taqwa before was that taqwa was basically good common sense. I'm going to give you the hadith of the imam, and we'll just a very quick reminder of what we covered already, and then where we're going to go on to. So the hadith of the imam was this. The imam says, this is from Imam Sadiq. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The Imam says this, al-aqlu, so intelligence or common sense, al-aqlu ma'ubida bihir rahman, is that through which the merciful is worshipped, right? Waqtusiba bihil jinan, and that through which paradise is gained. So if you remember the last time when we spoke, what we learned was this, that common sense would lead a person to look out for their real interest. If I see something's dangerous, then I avoid it. If something's in my interest, I try and get it. What we said is that real intelligent people are looking out for their real interest, which is the akhirah, not only the dunya. Now, we also learned another very important concept, and we covered this already, the idea that in Islam, more important than even paradise is forgiveness or maghfirah. We learned that from the ayat of the Quran before. What we learned from the ayat of the Quran was this, that getting God's mercy is not simply as simple as saying astaghfirullah. That it's just so, right? Rather, what we did was we learned that actually if we have left the path or been off track or haven't had taqwa or haven't been looking out for our interests, we have to make up for it. I'm going to share one of the verses of the Quran about that. So this verse, brothers and sisters, if you can look in surah number 20. So brothers and sisters, surah number 20 and verse number 82. But there are several verses. This is a Quranic reality. If you look at the verses that talk about tawbah and islah, tawbah and reform, making it up. It's not just, I say astaghfirullah and I'm just forgiven, but making it up. This is just one verse that the leader chose for this. So this one is, it says, it starts off this way. God's talking about mercy. Wa inni laghaffarun. God says, truly, I am merciful. Wa inni laghaffarun. Who is God merciful for? Is it just anybody who says, astaghfirullah, we're all good, my bad God? Is it just that? Or are we supposed to make up for it? God says, who is forgiven for? Wa inni laghaffarun liman taba. I'm forgiving for the person who first of all makes tawbah, wa amana, and believes, wa amila saliha, and does good deeds. The Islamic idea is to make up for the mistakes and the past. We learned that Quranic taqwa would lead us to compete with one another. One of the verses that we read, because it's going to be a collection, we're going to turn now to Surah Ali Imran, so Surah number 3. And we're going to turn to verse number 133. Surah 3, verse number 133. Where we learn that Quranic taqwa creates or stokes our sense of competition. We should be outdoing one another when it comes to taqwa. Right? So the verse, just very quickly, is this. So Surah 3, 133. Any brothers? Alhamdulillah. Any sisters? Alhamdulillah. Ready? Wasari'u. So compete with one another, race with one another, try to outdo one another. Ila maghfiratin min rabbikum. Race one another towards maghfirah from your Lord. What else? Wa jannah. And also paradise. Arduha samawatu wal ard. The extent of paradise is the heavens and the earth. U'iddat lil muttaqin. Paradise has been prepared for the people of taqwa. Now, what happens is, we learned also that we have a higher motivation than the dunya. This is from our last lesson, where we said that our motivation is loftier than just to get some financial rewards, financial benefits. Hadith is this. This is from Imam Kadhim. He says, Ama, so know this. Inna abdanakum, about your bodies. Know this about your bodies. Laysa laha thamanun. There is no price for your bodies, illa al-jannah, except for paradise. He says, فَلَا تَبِعُوهَا بِغَيْرِهَا. So don't sell yourselves for anything less. The idea is higher motivations, loftier motivations. Now, what we're going to do now are some of the traits of the people of taqwa. So there's four traits that inshallah we'll be trying to cover. If we want taqwa, if we want paradise, it's not just wishful thinking, it's not just hoping and praying. There's a relationship between taqwa and amal, actions. And these verses that I'm sharing, these are verses that make this very clear for us. Okay, so one of the verses is this. So this is verse number, surah number 3, verse number 134. Inshallah, everybody has it. God says this about, so we're talking about the people of taqwa. What are the people of taqwa like? Are we the people of taqwa? God says this, الَّذِينَ, those who, يُنْفِقُونَ, they do infaq, they spend in the way of Allah, فِي السَّرَّاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ, whether things are good for them, things are always are going very well, or in difficulty. Now, infaq, brothers and sisters, is targeted spending. This is the mark of the intelligent. It's not just spending. A person of taqwa is a person who identifies the needs. What does the community need? What does Islam need? My resources are limited. What can I do to serve the cause? If I do something that's reinventing the wheel, not taking care of Islam's true needs right now, that's not Quranic infaq. We'll be spending money. We're thinking that inshallah on the day of judgment, I'm going to have so many rewards. But I'm not doing infaq. I'll give you one example. I'm not sure if I gave this one last time. So one example and then we have to move forward. Once there was a scholar. And this scholar, he was speaking to a man. This man, alhamdulillah, was a wealthy man. The man said, I would like to give you some money, but I'd like you to buy the chains that people do. In Iran, they do the matam with the chains. Not the blood matam, the regular matam. So that scholar tried to explain to me, said, right now, what we really need are books. If you take this same money right now and turn that into buying books, we'll be able to really do something. You know what the man told him? He said, if you won't buy chains to do self-flagellation, then I'll find somebody else who will. This isn't the mark of the intelligent. What's the need right now? Targeted spending.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyumun Rauf Saburun Majid Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad ya mu'mini sallu
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The Limelight.
Many US voters will be voting with one issue top of their mind, the state of the US economy. Voters in a new poll have more favorable views of the economy under former President Donald Trump than of the economy under President Joe Biden. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A recent CBS News poll found that 65% of Americans remember the economy under former President Donald Trump as being good, compared with 38% giving the current economy under President Joe Biden the same positive assessment. In fact, almost 6 in 10 voters polled by CBS News described the U.S. economy under Joe Biden as bad, even as economists' views are much more upbeat due to the nation's stronger-than-expected gross domestic product, GDP, and low unemployment. Instead of entering a recession, as many economists had predicted last year, the economy appears to be on track to generate continued growth and more jobs whilst inflation recedes. The key to the disconnect could reside in how voters experience the economy between 2017 and 2019, during the first 3 years of Donald Trump's presidency prior to the pandemic's upheaval in 2020, compared with the post-pandemic years. These are two very different periods from an economic standpoint, noted Gregory Darko, chief economist at EY. The 2017 to 2019 period was the end of the strongest business cycle on record. The economy was doing well, the labor market was quite strong. We had the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, we had an economy growing at a sub 2% rate, but still moving forward. Overall, he added, there was essentially a pretty steady state of the economy before the pandemic. In other words, the economy prior to the pandemic was chugging along, providing a strong, if not stellar, environment. But the post-pandemic economy introduced a number of upheavals, including a labor shortage and the highest inflation in the past 40 years, which has since receded but remains above its pre-pandemic levels. There is that sentiment that you are still coming out of a shock, he added. To be sure, presidents often get credit when the economy is performing well and are blamed when it tanks, even though there's a limit to how much influence the commander-in-chief has over such a complex system. Indeed, the economy's performance is often tied to boom and bust cycles that don't have much to do with who's occupying the White House. Here's what the data shows about the 2017 to 2019 economy under Donald Trump versus the 2021 to 2023 economy under Joe Biden. The major difference between the two periods boils down to inflation, or the upward change in prices for goods and services. From 2017 to 2019, inflation hovered at above 2% per year, a low enough level where people generally don't notice changes from day to day. But when the COVID-19 pandemic shut global supply chains and caused a labor shortage, prices shot up, with inflation hitting a 40-year high of 9.1% in June of 2022. Suddenly, shoppers were reminded of inflation each time they wanted to go to a grocery store, an issue that remains a pain point for consumers. Even though inflation has receded, prices aren't going back to their pre-pandemic levels, and that continues to eat into consumers' budgets. We're coming out of an environment where inflation has become a key topic, a key issue, a key point of conversation, whereas it wasn't for most of the three decades that preceded the pandemic, Darko noted. It's gone from a non-issue to an essential issue, and that for me is the key reason people are feeling more downbeat than economic conditions would dictate. Consumers value predictability when it comes to prices, something that Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell highlighted when he spoke with CBS News last month. "I can't overstate how important it is to restore price stability, by which I mean inflation is low and predictable, and people don't have to think about it in their daily lives," Jerome Powell said. Wages rose at about 3% annually prior to the pandemic, representing solid gains, yet far from the strides of the late 1990s when workers enjoyed pay bumps of about 5% annually. But more importantly, wage growth from 2017 to 2019 inched ahead of inflation, providing American workers with more purchasing power. That flipped in the wake of the pandemic, when wage growth failed to keep up with inflation. Suddenly, workers were losing purchasing power, an issue they encountered on every grocery trip when they faced sky-high egg prices and more costly basics. With wages trailing inflation, many felt they were losing ground. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Voters in a new opinion poll have more favorable views of the economy under former President Donald Trump than of the economy under current President Joe Biden. The poll, released on Sunday, 3rd of March, by CBS News YouGov, found nearly two-thirds of registered voters said the economy under Donald Trump was good, compared to about 38% who said the same for Joe Biden's economy. More than half, or 59%, said they would describe the current economy as bad, whilst about 28% said the economy under Donald Trump was bad. More voters said they believed Joe Biden's policies over Donald Trump's will increase prices, 55% to 34%. About 44% said they believe Donald Trump's policies will drive prices down, while 17% said the same thing for Joe Biden. About 27% and 22% said they believe Biden or Trump's policies respectively will have no effect on prices. The Biden administration has faced criticism when it comes to economic policies in the wake of stubborn inflation and increasing interest rates. The White House last year ramped up its messaging around so-called Bidenomics, and Biden has repeatedly touted increasing wages, rising job satisfaction, and restoring union pensions. Inflation, however, has largely cooled in recent months, and the Federal Reserve's policymakers earlier this year indicated they expect to cut interest rates 3 times this year. Joe Biden and Donald Trump's campaigns have taken aim at each other's economic policies on numerous occasions in recent months. In January, the Trump campaign released an advertisement titled History Lesson, pointing out differences in gas prices, mortgage rates, and retirement savings under Donald Trump compared to Joe Biden's presidency. The latest opinion poll findings come out less than 2 days before Super Tuesday. Biden and Trump hold wide leads in their respective races. A hypothetical matchup between the two rivals shows that Donald Trump, with a nearly 3 percentage point lead over the incumbent Joe Biden, according to polling indexes by Decision Desk HQ and The Hill. The CBS News YouGov survey was conducted among a representative sample of 2,159 U.S. adults interviewed between 28th of February and 1st of March. The survey has a margin of error of plus or minus 2.8 percentage points. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
مجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a large number of women from across the country. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on December 27, 2023, a week before the birth anniversary of Lady Fatimatu Zahra, peace be upon her. This day is celebrated as Women's Day in Iran. Now, in the Islamic Republic, Although we have not yet been able to become Islamic in the true sense of the word, I have said this many times that it is only partially Islamic, at the same time, you see that women's accomplishments in the Islamic Republic are incomparable to before. They have made progress in science, in research, in social activities, in the arts, and in sports, among other things. We have so many female scientists, university professors, scholars, and authors in different kinds of writing, including practical writing, artistic writing, fiction writing, poetry writing, and the like. Before the revolution, we did not have even a tenth of what we have today. I was present in the environment of the society, and I'm aware of what it was like. Praise God, thanks to Islam, the country is rich in these fields today. This is despite the fact that the Islamic Republic is still a partially Islamic country, as I mentioned earlier, and we have not yet been able to implement Islam completely. If we succeed in implementing it in its complete form, these achievements that we have today will be multiplied many times and our situation will greatly improve.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
At the end of our session today, I would like to touch on the matter of the elections. With regard to the elections, I emphasized this matter a few days ago. You ladies and dear women can play a role in the elections. The most important role you can play is inside the home. Mothers can play a role by encouraging their children and their spouses to be active in the elections and to do their research correctly. Women look at issues and find some points more accurately and meticulously than men in some matters that involve recognizing individuals, their strategies, and their ideologies. Therefore, you can play a role both inside and outside the home by learning about the election candidates and going to the polling stations. I am very happy to see you all here today. The meeting took a while, and it is now past noon. God willing, you will all be successful. May God's greetings, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.